Do you like sleeping? You know I do. I wish I wasn't awake right now. Ugh, it's gross. I can't fly. I can't have sex with just random strangers who are celebrities. In my dreams, I can. And you know what can help you have the best dreams of your life? Helix Sleep. Helix Sleep is a premium mattress brand that provides tailored mattresses based on your unique sleep preferences. The Helix lineup includes 14 unique mattresses. They went to a dozen and then a baker's dozen and said, let's do one more. Including a collection of luxury models, a mattress for big and tall sleepers like myself, and even a mattress made just for the children. Helix is offering up to $200 off all mattress orders and two free pillows for our listeners. Go to helixsleep.com/funches. With Helix, better sleep starts now. Thank you for listening to the podcast and watching it. However you consume it, with your eyes, your ears, if you sniff it, that's fun and interesting to me. However you like it is however I want to give it to you. So thank you for being here. I truly appreciate it. We got ways that you can support the podcast. If you're interested, you can become a Patreon member. Go to patreon.com/gettingbetterwithron. There's some exclusive episodes over there. If you want me to send you a handwritten thank you note, there's an exclusive Ron Funches pen that's super cool that you might get. There's no way to figure that out. But you can just be involved and support us at patreon.com/gettingbetterwithron. If you want to play video games with me, like I'm playing Rumbleverses, playing Multiverses, a lot of things with Rumbleverse in their name or Verses. And you can come hang out, watch with me. You could play with me. Just go over to twitch.tv, Ron_Funches, and join the Funch Bunch. We got a Discord. We got a fun community. We just hanging out playing games. And if you got an Amazon account, link it with that Twitch, and you can throw me a few shekels for the podcast, and I would truly appreciate it. Helps me buy video games. Other than that, please watch Loot on Apple TV Plus. I am in California, at the Brea Improv, September 8th. I will also be coming to Florida. A lot of people have been asking me about going to Florida. It's a big place, I know. So just me going to one place in Florida does not mean that I am in your area. I get that. But I thought I should go ahead and let you know that I will be at the Denaya. I don't know how to pronounce it, so it's probably going to be hard for me to get people there. The Naya Point Improv, 20 miles outside of Miami. That's an easy one. 20 minutes outside of Miami, or 20 miles, something like that. It's improv there in Florida. I don't really ever go to Florida, so I don't know if I have any fans there. Let's find out. Come out and see me September 29th through October 1st. Go to ronfunches.com for tickets. You can also see me at the Helium Comedy Club in Indianapolis October 13th through the 15th, and a part of the Flyover Comedy Festival in St. Louis, Missouri, November 12th. Again, go to ronfunches.com for all your tickets. When it comes to that, Loot, Harley Quinn, Guys Game Night on Discovery Plus. Watch me and Carmen Morales play some fun games with Bobby Moynihan. It was a real good time. Other than that, let's get to the podcast. Hi. Ooh, it's going to be a fun one for me. I don't know how it's going to go for you guys, but I'm excited. This one might be a little name droppy, just to let you know off the top, but I'm feeling good, having fun. Let's talk about it. I hope you're feeling strong. I hope you're feeling brave. Oh, I hope you're feeling loved. And I hope you're so grateful for that love. I hope you're surrounding yourself with art. I hope you're inspired by that art. I hope that you're not losing that sense of wonderment and childness in you that makes things fun and happy and silly. No matter how old you get, just remember to have fun and that this life is a gift. And sometimes it's the world's motive to make you feel like it's a burden, feel like it's an obligation, feel like it sucks so that you waste it. But it is a gift, it is an opportunity, and it is fun, and it is challenging, and it is just life. So please embrace it. Go out and watch some art. That's something I did this last week. I had a really, really fun week, and I'm excited to talk about it because it was a little different for me. I went to New York this last week, which normally if I travel anywhere, it's for work, for stand-up, or for vacation with my wife. And this was for the first time since the pandemic that I was traveling for friends, that I was going to my friends Omar and Anna's wedding. I was officiating their wedding, my first time ever doing that, which is, again, a thrill. I love first times. It's not, you know, I'm going to be 40 in 6 months, which is something we'll talk about more and more on this podcast, I'm sure. But it's fun to just continue to find new firsts, new opportunities, things that make you nervous, things that make you excited. And I was really excited to officiate this wedding. I've known my friends for years, never officiated a wedding. I don't know why in my head I assumed that every member of the wedding would be a fan of mine. But a lot of them just thought that I was a guy who officiates a lot of weddings. And I don't. So then it made me nervous that I had to actually be good. And then I also started thinking about how they were actually getting married. So I really didn't want to mess it up and wanted them to feel like it was a beautiful experience. And it really, you know, there's just time, especially as a performer and who I am and my job. It helps me survive in a world where there's a lot of rejection, a lot of negativity online, a lot of people telling you you can't do stuff, or if you do it, that it sucks. And in order to deal with that, you really have to have a solid ego, a solid sense of self. And I do, and I like myself, and I think I'm hilarious. I think I'm one of the best comics in the world. You see how easy it rolls off my tongue? Just pure belief. And that's good for being on stage and for being in auditions, but when you're out in the regular world and you gotta officiate a wedding, and you know that you cannot compete with a bride as much as I wanted to, as much as I was like, let me see how I would look if I was putting on that dress. I would be a stunner. But you can't compete. You got to learn to put your ego away and to serve and to be in service. And it was just a beautiful situation to just be in service of their love and be able to be there for my friends. And I appreciate that, especially being invited. You know, I don't get invited to as much as people think like comedy is like a super tight knit big community and stuff. And people be like, oh, you love it. Your best friend is da da da, and you hang out with Richard Pryor and Hamburger and Seinfeld, and you guys all go to the deli together. That's a good group of people I would actually love to hang out with. But in general, you know, a lot of people were just acquaintances, and I don't get invited to a lot of things, which I would go to out of just sense of obligation. So actually I'm invited, excited that I don't, but it's nice to get invited to things. And since I was in New York for a few days for this wedding, I had a couple of options. I could go and I could go try to see if I could chase down sets at the Comedy Cellar, which is a place I still never performed at, or the Stand, or see just who would have me on their show. Or I decided, what if I just lived for a little bit? What if I just stayed in the hotel, especially since I got this baby and I've been with him all the time? What if I just stay in the hotel and rest all day for a day? And what if the next day I just go see? I never been in New York 5-6 times, and I never been to a theater to go see a show. And I did this time. I went to go see my friend Alex Edelman's one-man show, Just For Us. And he, it was a lucky leap for me. He's a good friend and a good dude. And he was having one final showing, actually the day before the wedding, and it was sold out. And I just reached out to him, and he didn't even, you know, that's one thing, man. I guess I got, now that I think about it, look at it, that's, I just love that kind of love and respect, and that people enjoy me, that he didn't even be like, oh man, you know, oh, I wish you had asked earlier. He didn't do none of that. He just was like, oh, I got you. And I really enjoyed it. And it was the first time that I sat and watched like someone's hour, I think it was like an 80 minute show. First time I sat there and watched someone's full show in years. And it was nice. And it was inspiring to look at someone's different perspective and see the way that they write in a way that I never would and have lived a life that I hadn't lived. And it was just enjoyable. And it was a real New York experience. I was sitting in, but Mr. Koji is going to be name droppy. I was sitting in between Mike Birbiglia and his family and Ira Glass. And I was like, man, it is super New York. I just am having a real New York time. And it was just a fun experience. It's just, again, to be surrounded by art, to be inspired, to fall in love with comedy. Because I don't know if you know. I don't know. I mean, not if you know this, but just within me lately. It ebbs and flows. I love comedy. I'm a big fan of stand-up comedy. I love stand-ups. One of my biggest things I try to do in life is help other stand-ups. That's why I help put Carmen Morales on the Guy Fieri thing, or help my friend Blair. I do whatever I can to help other stand-ups and other weird, beautiful minds. Sometimes I don't enjoy the discourse around stand-up and how negative things seem to see and how it seems kind of like cops where they're like, oh, we got to protect our own. And it always seems like to be that way when it's around like a white person being racist. And then when if it's around somebody else who's maybe a person of color being canceled also for some crazy weird stuff, I don't hear a peep about it. And, you know, well, not that it would. I wouldn't stand up for that. I myself am like sitting out being like, let me figure out what's going on with this whole Tiffany Haddish thing before I say anything. I hope it's nothing because I like her as a person, but I will drop you at the drop of a hat if you touch your children. So that's fine with me if you then go to jail for forever. But I hope that's not the case at all. Truly, truly, that would be heartbreaking. And, you know, I just feel like we got to let stuff like that play it out. And I don't like to gossip about stuff like that. But I just also found it very unique that, like, we had this situation where somebody made a sketch that people are saying is, you know, gross and out of hand and at the very least not funny and distasteful. But these are the same people who are like, you got to be able to protect your art. It doesn't matter what it is. You got to take people to haunted houses and to the backyards and into the fairgrounds where they get judged to find out if they got the blue ribbon pig or not. But with something like this, I ain't heard a peep from none of those same people. And I just put just something that I noticed. that when it comes to a black woman, they're not really. And again, don't blame you. I'm not, because what if they find out that it's negative? I get it. I just think it's interesting. It's something that, wears on my mind. And I've seen a lot of discourse about the younger generation and a lot of people kind of disrespecting comedy, not seeing the value in stand-up and thinking it's lame because a lot of people are spouting old school views that are kind of racist and transphobic and homophobic. And people think that they're doing something. But really, to me, it's just like, you know, it's really whittling down the marketplace and making it less likely that new people come in and fall in love with stand up because you really have to already be like, you have to be there and be like, it's all jokes, man. You can't take a joke. If you can't take a joke, everybody joke about jokes and stuff. But it's like, you know, I love a world when people think a little bit more about stuff and progress on stuff and change on stuff. There's old jokes of mine that I wouldn't do now and jokes I'm sure, I hope in the future that I'll look back and be like, oh, I fucked up then. That's just part of evolving and growing. And I don't like people defending the lack of evolution. You know, that doesn't make sense to me. So sometimes I get a little worn out and a little mad about comedy. And so it was nice to see someone like Alex Edelman, who has this just beautiful mind and great joke writing skills. And it's just open to talk about the craft, which I am a big fan of, about how you approach your viewpoint in writing and storytelling and just learning to become more of a master of your craft. And I'm all about that. And so it was just a beautiful time period. And I really appreciate him letting me see that show. And whenever it's back on tour, because I'm sure it will be, or when they tape it and do something with it, please go check it out. Alex Edelman, Just for Us. very enjoyable. Like I said to him in Ira Glass and Bagger Biglia backstage, another name drop, it was the closest thing I had ever seen to Jewish Def Comedy Jam. It was just Jewish people falling out laughing like he was Martin Lawrence, and he was pacing the stage with... I was going to say a strong stage presence, but it was, you know, he's filled anxiety ridden. I love Alex. And then, you know, on my way back home, I just stopped in Chicago to go see some wrestling. So Al Out, and the first time seeing some wrestling in a while. And again, I just love performances. I love fun. I love silliness. I love being around people. And it was got to be around my good friend, Dave LaGreca, my friend, Gabby LaSpizza, and just being near them. And the way that Dave was acting like a kid at a wrestling show, it made me excited to bring my kid. Hopefully Teddy one day would like to go to a show like that. And if he doesn't, we'll go do what he wants to do. But I still get excited about it. And it's one of the things that I think is really fun and overlooked about being a parent, that it allows you to kind of relive some things that you wouldn't think about if you just are on your own, you know? And I just really love it. Just a good weekend, surrounded by art, surrounded by wrestling and friends. And that's what I love, is that, like, you know, Gabby and David, they live in New York. I live in LA, and we're all in Chicago to watch CM Punk beat up John Moxley and then MJF come back. And it's a beautiful time. And thank you, Tony Schiavone, for the tickets, former guest on the podcast. And also check out my wrestling podcast. If you guys are into wrestling, I have a new wrestling podcast on Spotify called One Fall with Ron Funches. We do it live every Sunday, 6 p.m., 9 Eastern. You can call in. You can talk about wrestling with me and my friends. It's very, we are just into just help letting people get into wrestling who never watched it before. If you're new and you don't think that this community is very welcoming, come on over to One Fowl. We'd be glad to have you. Now that, you know, just I wish Omar and Anna well. Hope they have a beautiful and long marriage. Just their excitement about being married and seeing Omar's face when he saw his bride, it just reminded me of how I felt when I got married. And that was helpful because me and my wife were in a big argument at the time. And so I was a little bit mentally confused about the whole situation. But sometimes you just got to be reminded how important love is and how strong a family can be, and how there's just power in a family unit and power in someone truly having your back, believing you and telling you the truth, whether you want to hear it or not. And that comes in many forms. I'm open to all forms of love and family, whatever that means to you. Just have a good circle around you that really believes in you, really has your heart and your mind just in their thoughts. And, you know, you understand why I fucked that up, because I said that I was supposed to say have your heart and mind, but I said have your heart and mind, and then I was going to say in mind, but then that would have been a really weird sentence. So then everything fell apart. But you can probably piece everything together. The point is, it's just that love is important. Love is strong. If you have someone that loves you, especially right now, times are getting rougher and rougher. Prices are going up and up. So it's important to have a good circle. If you have a bad circle, it'll make world, you know, this world seems like hell. But if you have a good group of people around you, even the worst days, you know, kind of feel like you're a part of some ragtag vagabond circus or vaudeville thing. And that's what I love. Got friends of every background, every social status. And I love my group, and I appreciate being part of it. And I appreciate you guys being here. And I'm excited to get talk to our next guest, legend in the stand-up comedy world, creating own sitcom, you know, the stuff that I love, the stuff that I'm into, the stuff that I'm inspired by. So I love it when somebody comes on that has achieved my dreams already. It don't make me jealous. It make me inspired. So it make me feel like I can get there too. So please enjoy this conversation with the legendary, the amazing, the gangster, the rabbit herself, Miss Pat.
Hi.
Hey. Hey, Miss Pat.
Yeah, I don't see my dirty house behind me, dude.
No, just a printer.
Oh, good. I'm in between houses. I'm moving.
Where are you moving from?
I just moved from Indiana.
Okay. Yeah. That's okay. That's what I thought. Okay. Smile. The show really is just very autobiographical, huh?
Oh, yeah. The show is straight out of Plainfield, Indiana. That's where I moved from.
Okay. Let me start this episode. It's usually how I start every episode, which is by telling you I wanted to talk to you, why I wanted you on the podcast. I mean, for you, it's just, I love your comedy. I loved your comedy for a long time. One of my greatest moments earlier in my comedy career is the fact that I think we were at a festival together. It might have been in Canada, might have been Montreal, might have been something else. I don't even know. But that you stopped me and you talked to me, and the fact that you knew who I was meant a lot to me, because I was just like, oh, I've been watching you. I've been enjoying you for a long time. And when I think about how, you know, a lot of people are bitter in comedy and bitter about life in general. And a lot of times when I hear people talk about how you can't make it, you can't do this, you can't do that. You're one of the people that I think about that shows me that, like, with enough dedication and enough unique viewpoint, that you can really do anything you want to do. And to see you get so much recognition now from your show and from the special and from, I mean, the show is amazing. I didn't even really watch it until this week, but to, as a fan of sitcoms my whole life, and to watch this and immediately be like, oh, this is like an evolution of the things that I grew up watching, like Roseanne and the Bernie Mac show. And it just is so real and so enjoyable. And to, for now you get three seasons, and the overall deal with BET, it's like all off of like you. And your voice, your real life, is very inspiring to me, especially when, you know, when I hear no's, when I hear my story isn't either too dark or isn't dark enough or whatever. You're one of the people that helped me push through that. So I appreciate to get to talk to you.
Oh, wow. Thank you. I was actually shocked you knew. I was actually shocked you knew who I was, because I think our rooms was like right across the hall from each other, and we walked out of the cell. I was like, Ron Funches, and you'd be like, oh, I was like, oh, wow, he knew who I was.
So was why good. Would you be surprised that I know who you are?
I don't think anybody know who the hell I am. That's just how I am. You know, yesterday I flew in from L.A., and I came home, and I took my bra off, and I ended up going to Publix. And so no makeup on. I'm just ran to get a sandwich for my husband. And I hear these ladies behind me say, I think that's Miss Pat. I think that's the lady from the Miss Pat show. I think that's Miss Pat. I said, I am Miss Pat, but I ain't got on no bra. You know, instead of asking me, you standing right there behind me talking about me. I'm like, I am fucking Miss Pat. I don't want no bra, okay?
What is it like for you, for people? Because I imagine you get more and more situations like that with people loving you, going from, you know, I know you're going from being like a road dog, with being very accessible, to now like these people are kind of sometimes surprised when they see you. Is that been a change for you?
Well, it surprised me when they see me doing normal shit. And I'm like, hey, I'm a normal person, okay? I don't need nobody to grocery shop for me. I'm not bringing nobody in my house to do things to my husband that I'm not going to do. So I'm just going to keep doing what we was already doing. I go to the store for myself. So, you know, it's what it does for me, it makes me have to put on makeup and comb my hair more. That's what I don't like. I don't like this face, okay? I like living like what I look like with all of this stuff is off. I hate wearing makeup. I hate putting a bra on during the day. I just want to relax, you know what I'm saying? So, but now I kind of have to take, oh, I can't just walk outside like this no more. Mm-hmm. Somebody might notice me. So that's the part I don't like.
I never really think about the negatives of it. It was not, yeah. And I get that. That kind of leads me to the fact that, like, what is it like for you just acting on this show then, as far as like being in more of a Hollywood environment and being in this more like just you stand up is very free. You just talk, you do what you want. And I guess your show is kind of pretty much the same, but has there been anything where you kind of ran up into it where you're like, oh, this is different from my stand up voice, or because it's your show, it's just kind of tailored to you?
Well, you with stand up, I own it. You know, I don't have to go to work with a TV show. You got to go to work. It's a contract. So, and that's why stand up is so big to me, because it's something when all of this other hooray is gone, I'm still a comedian. You can never take that from me. So that's the thing I don't like. You have to, like, when you do a TV show, you got to listen to notes. And then people don't understand what you're thinking or what your dream is for the show or what your vision is for the show. And then, really, execs is outside of you. They might understand what you're trying to do, but they don't know what's in your head. Mm-hmm. And then they come in with their 2 cents that don't fit. And a lot of them are trying to drill their 2 cents in there. So I'm 50 years old, Ron, and I don't have no problem. I said, y'all, I told Hollywood a long time ago, y'all can never give me as much as I could steal from you, because I know some people that'll fuck you up. So it's just like that. So, you know, that's what I hate the most. Like, when people don't understand what you're trying to do, and then they come and want to insert their 2 cents in it, just let the show be. And every time when I've had those problems with execs, and me and my co-creator, we stick to our words, it works out. That'd be the favorite part of the show. Mm-hmm. That's the part that the fans like the most, the part that I fought the most. And I've just learned in this business, fight till you can't fight no more, because they don't understand it. If they understood it, they would have sold it to you instead of you selling it to them.
Damn, that's a real good point. Yeah. If they could make it, they make it and cut you out. So
exactly. But I brought it to you. I brought the fresh idea to you. So why don't you allow me to let the fresh idea grow? I ain't asking you to go over budget. I'm asking you to lead a damn project along. But I will say this about BET Plus. I don't have those problems as much. I the show was originally on Hulu. I don't think Hulu would have let us do what we're doing. Mm. And sometimes I had to tell my co-creator when the show didn't move forward. I said, you got in this business, in the world, because I'm an ex-drug dealer, you got to learn to mess with people who mess with you. Mm-hmm. Stop trying to force your way into things. So I deal with people who wants to deal with Miss Pat. If you don't want me at your party, cool with me. I ain't got to go no Hollywood party. They boring anyway. I don't do nothing but go there and put their food in my pocketbook and go out the door. I can go steal from Kroger. I don't need it. I mean, everybody kissing one person ass at a party. Oh my God. I went to a party. I ain't gonna say it. I went to a party. Oh my God, this party is lovely. I said, this is the most boring party. I want to bust the DJ in the mouth. They suck. I say, I fucking hate this party. Why is everybody telling this person this party is good? It sucks. But nobody tells the truth.
No, and so it's a different person's party every year, because that person falls off the next year.
That too. But so I just learned it. I don't even want to go to your party. First of all, I'm 50. I go to bed around 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock. Okay. When my bra come off, them the lights for me. It's like turning off the lights in the bedroom. When my titties go down, my brains go down. When Pam signed this up at 7 o'clock, I said, she know I go to bed at 6:30. But I stayed up for you, son. Bring me a Gatorade.
Thank you for staying up for me. I appreciate it. So what was your vision for the show when you were making it? Because when I see it, you know, like I said, I see, you know, Roseanne, I see a Bernie Mac show, I see classic sitcom, but like spoken how real people talk. And so I just want to know, what was your vision when you were making it?
Well, when we started off, I mean, because this show went through 3 writers. So that was the 3rd writer was a young guy named Jordan Cooper. And it was his idea to insert the real language. But one thing he told me, he said, everybody keep comparing you to Roseanne. You're not Roseanne.
No,
you really Archie Bunker.
Yeah.
And I was like, I damn sure is, because I think outside the box and say stuff everybody else scared to say, and everybody don't always agree with me. But that was great about Archie Bunker, because he said the stuff that everybody was scared to say. But he also allowed himself to learn from some of the messed up stuff he would say. So he just said, you know, you're more like Archie Bunker to me. And I was like, I can see that. I can see that. But the vision for the show is just to, you know, to really what it is now, my life. He inserted the real stories and more the language, the way I talk.
So what did the other people want to do then? You don't want to go back there.
Ooh, are you tired? I am. But don't you hate it when after a hard day of work, listening to your boss that you hate, dealing with your children and your significant other, and then you lay down in your bed and your mattress, and it is also not supportive? Man, well, we may not be able to change our family. We may not be able to change our jobs at the given moment, but you can change your mattress. Helix Sleep is a premium mattress brand that provides tailored mattresses based on your unique sleep preferences. They got 14 unique mattresses. That's a lot of mattresses. But they all you got to do, take a little sleep quiz, and then, boom, they personalize that mattress, ship it straight to your door, free of charge. Helix knows there's no better way to test out a new mattress than by putting it through its paces, sleeping on it, eating on it, freaking on it. And that's why Helix offers a 100-night risk-free trial. Try out that new Helix mattress you got and see how your body adjusts. It probably starts singing to you like Mariah Carey during Christmas time. And if you decide it's not a good fit for you, well, you're welcome to return it for a full refund. But I wouldn't return Mariah Carey. I'm not a dummy like Nick Cannon. Everybody is unique and everyone sleeps differently. And that's why Helix Sleep has so many different mattress models to choose from, each designed with specific sleep positions and feel preferences. They got models with memory foam. Boom. Models with more responsive foam to cradle you like you a little baby. Plus, enhanced cooling features to keep you from overheating at night. If you are in LA in this heat wave, you know you want that. And if your spine needs a little TLC, a little Lisa Left Eye Lopez and chili and T-bars, well, they got you. Each Helix mattress is a hybrid design, and they can contain individually wrapped steel coils in a base with premium foam layers on top. That seemed like too much information. I don't think I should have read that, but let's keep it in. I like my Helix mattress mashed up with quiz. I've had it for a couple years, so I don't even remember my quiz anymore, but it was simple. Showed up in my house. I popped it open. It was like a little pillow. It was like that Marshmallow Man from Ghostbusters was in my house. It was delightful. Plus, Helix mattresses are American made, come with a 10 or 15 year warranty. And remember, you get to try it out for 100 nights risk free. But you don't have to take my word for it. Helix was awarded the number one mattress pick by GQ and Wired magazines, everybody's favorites. Now, Helix is offering up to $200 off all mattress orders and two free pillows for our listeners. Just go to helixsleep.com/funches. That is helixsleep.com/funches. With Helix, better sleep starts now.
You know, the greatest, the one of the biggest thing I've learned creating this show, and this is, I call my show a voice show because it's based so much off of me, is when you get writers that don't listen to you, when you got the vision, you could never, and when you're a comedian and you're a writer and a comedic writer and you bumping heads with a person, they try to say, you know, I'm like, my jokes are funnier than yours, but you take all my jokes out the strip. I'm like, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. So, In this world with writers, I just learned, even though people get hired to do something for you, they still try to insert their visions. And I just told him, I said, you know, guys, I don't want no TV show like this. And he was like, are you crazy? I said, nah, I don't want to be on TV like that. And it was scary because you want the money. I'm signed to Fox at the time. It was a Fox show. And so, you know, I'm with Lee Daniels and Brian Graves. And everybody was like, are you sure? I said, I can't do this. I want to be put on TV where I can be me and can be funny. And so Lee Daniels was like, well, let me go to the street and find you a writer. And then he found the writer, Jordan Cooper, and he listened. All I ever asked people to do to listen. But instead of listening to me, writers was going off trying to create their own world. You know, I'm not Claire Huxtable. Mm-hmm. So why are you going to try to write me like, first of all, I can't even pronounce all the words. And I be fucking up words all the time. So why are you going to give me any words I can't pronounce? If they put them in the strip, now I'd be like, take that out. I can't say that. I'm from Georgia. I say screep. I say shrimp. You know, stop giving me words I can't pronounce. So it was just it was turning me into something that I didn't want to be, and I'd rather just walk away and hope and pray that I got another chance. And I did. I got three chances with this show, and it ended up being a hit.
Yeah, that's wild. That's because I think sometimes, I mean, I was talking about my intro for the earlier podcast that I was doing where I was pitching a show and they kind of turned it down and were just like, oh, you know, if you want to do something edgier, like come back with the idea, edge it up a little bit. And I was just like, no, that's not my style. If you know my style, why the fuck would you ask me to do that? You know, like,
why would you take the meeting?
Yeah, exactly. And yeah. It's just been, for me, like the confidence to just not be like, all right, well, let me go see what I can do. It just come from more being successful myself and for being a younger dad. And it kind of makes this job a little bit easier for me. And I imagine just your life being a drug dealer, having kids young, does it make it so that, like, you know, rejection in Hollywood, does it just roll off your back easier? I mean, I imagine so.
I don't know what rejection in Hollywood is. I'd be like, yeah, you won't fuck with me, I won't fuck with you either. Yeah. You don't want to buy this? Hey, how you sell dope? What, you don't want that crack? Somebody else want that crack, okay?
Yeah, that's true.
So I don't take it serious when they don't want something. You know, if either I go back and I rework it, or I keep trying to sell it to it, can't sell. A lot of times you can put shit on the shelf and come back to it. And then they be like, oh my God, I've been looking for like something like this for 10 years. You dumb. I tried to tell you this 5 years ago when you was over at another network. You don't remember me? So, you know, rejection in Hollywood, I don't really care because I'm a stand-up comedian. Out of all of this, I love doing stand-up. So when you tell me no for a TV, that just tell me, if don't nobody else buy, I can go back to doing what I'm doing. I ain't got to be tied down for 20 weeks.
Yeah, it's very true. But what about, like, for me, I always felt like that. And then the pandemic kind of shook my courage on that, where I'm like, oh, shit, this can't. I always was like, well, stand-up's always there. And then it wasn't there, you know?
You know, the pandemic was good for me because when everybody else ran in the house, it was scary. Let me tell you something. I've had gonorrhea. And COVID was not bad as gonorrhea. Okay. I wouldn't worry. I said, oh, everybody cancel the show. I do it. I was so busy. I said, oh, these wimpy ass people. They're so scary of a little cough.
Well, we all ain't been shot in the head.
We all ain't had gonorrhea either, but God had prepared me for COVID, and I came out rocking. So I ain't care. I worked. And then when everything really shot down, by that time, I just finished my basement because I'm a DIY person. So I went in the house and threw my daughter out her room, and I painted my 2,600 square foot basement. And we did some floors and some granite. We had a good time. I had a good time.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I think it's coming. You've been married for a long time now, right?
Oh, yeah. A long time. I need to ask you, hey, baby, can I get a free nump? He'll say, that better be your fucking middle name. Yeah, I've been married a long time. Raised a bunch of kids.
You have a real beautiful life.
I got it. You know what? I'm happy. And that's one of the things I know to a lot of people in Hollywood. They ain't happy. Yeah. I'm happy. I come home to people. They don't give a fuck about me being on TV. They just want to know that you pick up the grocery or what you got or what you going to do for them. My family don't. Ain't no Miss Pat don't live in this house. Mm. Pat live outside this house. Patricia live in this house. That's who live in this bitch. I still got to do everything. We ain't got no maid, even though I've been trying to tell my husband, Groupon got it locked down on the maids. Yeah. You can call a bit different maid every fucking week on Groupon, but he insists we do it ourselves.
Okay. Well, I mean, I disagree on that one, but that's different strokes, different folks. What are your goals right now?
You know, I got the overall deal with BET Plus and Paramount. So I'm hoping to create some things. I'm working on creating other things. I would love to, you know, write a movie, be in some movies, another TV show. I got a few ideas out there. I'm going to see if I can sell. So that's what I just shot an hour last year. I'm working on creating another hour, you know, just making the comedy better and finishing my big project. I'm building a house here and just stuff like that. I do the morning show on V103 here in Atlanta with Big Tigger. So I'm enjoying doing that, waking up at 4:30, going in, talking a little crap and out by 10.
That's beautiful. I mean, I love that. Cause that reminds me of like how the Steve Harvey route of like always constantly building this fan base, no matter what you're doing. Right. And then the next thing you know, you're hosting some Family Feud and Showtime at the Apollo and all that stuff. And it just come from the longevity of people fucking with you because you've been authentic and been who you are. Which is not a real question. It's just, you cool as fuck. I like you.
Thank you. Thank you. I mean, and I'm just human. I'm not all with that Hollywood shit. I don't need to go eat at no rich people house. I just need me a box of Chick-fil-A, and I don't eat churches. I work too hard to get the fuck away from churches. I ain't gonna lie to you. That's about the high as I get right there. Chick-fil-A. That's all I need is a little Chick-fil-A in my life, and I'm good.
All right. There was nothing, no bougie thing, no celebratory thing that you bought when you were like, when you got the overall deal or when you got heard about the third season. Was nothing crazy that you were like, I never, you know, because to me, I mean, I don't know. Maybe you did think you'd get there, but like, that's wild to me. Like, overall deal, so successful with the show, 50 years old. That's like legendary shit. So I imagine you celebrated somehow.
Yeah, I just bought a purse.
Okay.
I always buy myself a purse. I mean, because I'm going on vacation finally, you know, because we shot season 2 and season 3 back to back. It's nothing that I want to really do, you know, other than just spend time with my family. And, you know, my whole family damn near work on the set too. So, no, I didn't do anything crazy. I literally finished 20 episodes and jumped back on the road the next week.
So you just a worker.
Yeah, I'm just a worker. So, I mean, and I don't come off until BET Plus say we got a season 4. Or if we get a season 4, that's when I come off. If not, I'm going to keep on rocking and rolling. Trying to build, you know, I'm finally getting to the point where all comedians want to be where you're selling tickets and trying to move over into theaters. Mm-hmm. So I'm working on doing that. That's one of the big focus for my comedy career right now.
No, I like that. Yeah. Wow. I didn't even really think that you weren't there yet. I just imagine you were. Maybe it's because
I do play theaters. Like I said, I just started getting back out. The show just wrapped, August. I don't damn know. About a month ago, we wrapped. So I'm literally just back out here. So I've done a few theaters and clubs. So I'm doing between theaters and clubs now.
Okay.
I'm just trying to build a fan base.
Same. Me too. I just trying not to. I just don't want to have to do gigs I don't want to be. I want to always be someplace I want to be.
You know what's great about, you know, I've been doing this almost 20 years and it's, it feels so good to say, nah, I want that. Mm-hmm. Cause you know, as a hungry comic group, I take it. I do it. And it, money shitty, hotel shitty. You know, I got to say so in my career now. You know, I don't have to be quiet. And, you know, I'm no diva. I'm not asking you to give me 50 bottles of alcohol or buy me no shoes or a dozen of Forever Roses. I'm not asking for that. But I do ask a nice hotel, which I don't have a problem getting anymore. I do ask for decent, good pay, and I get it. So those are the things that matter the most to me. Just don't put me in no shitty hotel and just pay me well. So, and when I don't want to do it, I don't want to do that. That's what feels good to me when you can say no. Because, you know, I've been working for 20 years and say no. And then the club owners that treat you dirty, oh my God. Did you make a shit list? Tell me you got a shit list.
It's not written, but it's mental. Yes.
It's mental. Every comedian got a shit list. I got my shit list and I use it. I use my shit list. I got some people on my shit list who treated me like shit in the beginning. So yeah, I got shit list.
I love it.
I love
some people think
out.
That because this is a positive podcast, I would be against that. But I always tell my wife, I'm petty as hell. It's what fuels me. If somebody slide me on, I will hold on. I saw some guy that I, my very first audition, I'm still in Portland, Oregon. I was scared of shitless auditioning for New Girl. And I'm with my best friend. And then his roommate comes out. We've been practicing this thing for like 5 hours and he just comes out and like makes fun of me and is like, oh, you sound, you know, basically just saying I was doing shit. And I was first time ever doing an audition. And then I seen this is 13 years later and I'm still like, hey, well, you know, I don't know if you saw, but I'm in movies and shows and all bunch of shit now. I bet, you know, I heard you in acting class. I hope it's going well. Let me know if you need some notes. I love being petty. It fuels you.
Yeah. You know, and that's, it's so good with the clubs because I remember times when, for me, they would only want you to do Urban Night. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you're not going to throw me in that fucking box like that. You're not going to make me the big, fat, loud Black girl. You know, that was one of the biggest things I had to fight about. Hey, I'm talking about something here. But they go, oh, we can book your Urban Night. I said, I don't want to do no fucking Urban Night. I said, I don't want to do your nigga night. I don't want to do that. I want to do what everybody else do. That's what I want to do. So I got my little list and those people come across it too. I'm like, nah. Oh yeah. Ask for more.
Yeah. Ask for sure. More. Yeah. Oh yeah. Like we can do it, but your price is double than most.
And cause people, you just never know who's going to be next. And as I wish club owners would treat everybody like their star, or, you know, or just treat everybody right. But you pick and choose the people that you want to treat right. And you might be fucking, you know, rubbing over a diamond in the rough. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what happened to me a lot. But I just stayed quiet and said, comedy taught me how to be calm because I'm a hood rat. And usually when you pisses me off, I pop you in your mouth. Mm. And this is a business where you can't be going around popping people in their mouths. So it taught me a lot of patience, quite a few tears, but it taught me how to be patient because it's nothing you can rush. If you might get a chance or you might not. The whole thing for doing comedy 15 and 20 years is prepare yourself. So in case you get that opportunity, you are ready. That's what it was for me.
No, that's just a positive attitude and just taking advantage of your opportunity, striking when you can. That's just a smart way to be. I mean, I know you've gone over a lot, and I know a lot of people know your history, but I'm assuming there's some people on my podcast who might not know you a bit. So I just want to talk to you a bit about how you got started in comedy, which is, over 20 years ago now, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, from what I read, it was like a caseworker or something that recommended it, or is that just some type of Hollywood story?
No. It was true. She's my godmama now, but it was a caseworker. I used to go in and get recertified for my food stamps and stuff and my daycare. Mm-hmm. And I was just telling these crazy stories from my life. And she said, you know, you're really missing your calling. I'm like, what are you talking about? She said, you should really be looking to doing stand-up comedy. I'm like, huh? And I was like, she's like, you got stories like Richard Pryor. And I was like, Richard Pryor, he was a comedian. I knew him from movies. You know, I didn't know Richard Pryor was a comedian. I didn't know anything about being a comedian. So I just went home and did some research and said, you get paid to tell your business? I do this all the time on the phone with my friends. And so I went to an open mic and I never stopped. I literally never stopped. Now, you know how some comics take a break? Mm-hmm. I would go and work and get off. Leave work and go straight and do stand up.
And at this point, you had two kids already before you started, right?
I had two kids, and I also had custody of my sister, four kids. So I had six kids and a husband at the house. I had three kids because I already had Garyana, and my son was a baby. I just had a child because he's 22.
So as soon as you started, did you immediately get that high and get that buzz? Just to be like, all right, I'm going to fuck with this thing that doesn't even necessarily pay that well at start. And you already got the kids and stuff. That's a strong decision.
Well, my husband worked at General Motors. So my husband had a good job. Mm-hmm. So I think that's like, you know how you hear all these stories of comedians struggling. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be honest. I don't know that. I didn't struggle. You know, because my husband worked at General Motors, and then I had a little small, you know, side hustle, whatever the hell I was out there doing. So, you know, $50, I would go and work for you for $50, but it wasn't about the $50. It was about because I wanted stage time and I loved doing stand up.
So, when for not knowing about stand up, did the falling in love with it just come from doing it the first time, or were you just always? I mean, I just love the fact that the person who told you this is straight up going like, "You're missing your calling." That's so specific.
Yeah, I mean, the first time I did it, I was like, "Oh my God, I like this." I was like, "I can do this," but you know, comedy is an art. It's almost like putting on makeup. It's like painting a picture. You got to learn the strokes of it. Mm-hmm. So. What I started to do when I really like fell in love with it after the first time, and everybody kept saying, oh my God, you should really stick with it. You tell stories, you know, you should look at storytelling comedians. And the first person they said was Richard Pryor. They said Bill Cosby. And so I cursed. So I'm more like Richard, but Bill Cosby tells a hell of a story. So I just studied them two all the time. On how to tell a story, to weave them in and out. And because I wanted, you know, when I found something that I really like in life, which was stand up, I just wanted to be great. I want to be great. That's what I want to be. That's why I take it. People are like, you at open mic? You damn right I'm at open mic. Every chance I get.
Well, I think you really are. I mean, you are great. You're amazing stand up, and the fact that you're so, I really like that Archie Bunker comparison because you're so fearless and you don't write to be right. You don't write to be liked. You write because of like, this is what you actually think, or this is what you think is funny. And I feel like that is such what pure stand up is. And there's sometimes so many people like try to lean into like, well, this is what people are talking to right now. And yeah, you've never been like that from whenever.
I hate current events. I don't do current events because by the time you work them out and be so funny, nobody's talking about it anymore. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nobody's talking about them anymore. So something happened in my life every day, or I have so much rich history from my past that I can always pull out something that people can relate to. You know, like I just started on my new hour and I'm talking about, you know, my daddy showing up who had never paid child support and decided to slap me when he's supposed to be hitting my sister. He couldn't tell us apart because he left when we was babies. And how I had to whoop his ass because I didn't know he was my dad. So, you know, it's like, I don't ever do it for the audience. I do it for me, because when you do it for the audience, then the audience will control what you talk about. When I tell people and they're like, oh, I said, get the hell out of here. If you feeling sorry for me, write me a check. We can cry together. I'm not here. You know my history. I said you ugh about that, and I ain't even got to the molestation joke shit. So just hang tight, okay? You know, I have this big thing where I'm talking about abortion. I had an abortion. Why shouldn't I be able to talk about I had an abortion? My thing is, you can't keep them all.
You gotta pick and choose.
Yeah, you can't keep them all. But be careful, because I always say I killed my LeBron. I killed my LeBron James, and the one I had after him got a slow eye. He ain't never been athletic. He lazy, fat. His knees done gave out right now. His knees is on oxygen. He 34 years. Everywhere I take him, they think he my husband. I'm like, he 30. His hair falling out of his head. I said, okay, God, you got me back for this abortion and you gave me this piece of shit.
I like that. I can only rate that because I have a 19-year-old and I have a 4-month-old, and everybody thinks my 19-year-old is my little brother. And they never, I'm like, you know, that's you look just like, you can tell that's my son. But I appreciate them just assuming that I didn't have a kid that early. Who do you see out there right now comedically that you enjoy? Is there anybody that younger that you travel with, or anybody that you're seeing that you want to recommend to people?
Vincent Bryan. I don't know if you ever heard of Vincent Bryan. He opened for me. Hilarious. Hilarious. Just such a, I mean, I just love his style. I mean, you know how a lot of times you get opening acts and they just stick to the same 20 minutes over and over. And even though you go off and write and they just make your show stale, I mean, this kid writes all the time. All the time this kid is right. Hilarious. As far as female, it's this girl named, I'm quite sure you heard of, Jess Niece. Hilarious. She cracks me the fuck up. I love Jess Niece. So those are the two youngest that, you know, I know. I don't know a lot of comedians anymore because I ain't on the scenery like that. You know, shit, I'm married. I'm old. But, you know, comedian pop, 20 comedian pop up every damn day.
Yeah,
but Vincent
sure.
Bryan opened for me. He is hilarious.
All right. Well, I'll make sure I'll check him out. I love that. Yeah. I love people constantly writing. That sounds dope.
He also writes on the show. He writes on the Miss Pat show. So I met this kid and he went out with me about 6 years ago. And I said, you know, if my TV show goes, I'm going to make sure I give you an opportunity. I said, all I ask you to do is go write a spec strip. I asked 3 or 4 of my friends, comedians, to write a spec strip. He was the only one came back with one. I said, hey, y'all, ain't nobody gave me shit in life, so why would I give you shit? I asked you to write a spread. It didn't have to be perfect. Because we, you know, my room is filled with young writers. And then you got some big ones that, you know, more experience at the top. But most of it, me and the co-creator friends and family. My daughter writes on the show. She even turned in a damn fake script. So if I ask you to do something and you don't do it, then I can't hand you nothing. Because if I hand it to you, you're not going to appreciate it.
Yeah, no, I mean, that would be spitting in the face of all the stuff that you went through to get your show, to just turn around and hand it to somebody.
Exactly. So I didn't give him the job. I gave Vincent the job. He came in with a funny-ass episode of the Boondocks, and I thought it was hilarious. And I said, come on, you're going to come right on my show.
Love it. You talk about you have your family on the show as well. What is it like having to work with them all day? And because that's and also, I mean, that's one of my goals with my son. You know, my son's 19 and he's also on autism spectrum. So I'm like constantly just thinking about his job history and getting him job. And that's my thing. Like, I got to get something going. I can just use the nepotism that white people been using for centuries.
And all of their families be on their shit. All of their family. I learned that from Lee Daniels. The first time I went on one of his sets, his cousin, sister, auntie, I'm like, God damn. I said, this is what I'm going to do with the Miss Pat show, get off the ground. And so my daughter is in makeup. I have a son that's in construction. I have a nephew that's in construction. My other daughter is a writer on the show. And my brother is there. My whole damn family there. Why not? You know, I made sure they all get in the union and we're going to ride this thing out. I create and we create together.
I love it. You're building a whole new Wayans.
I'm trying. I only got one child that can write. I got some friends that can write. Them motherfuckers makeup and construction. That's all they can do.
But they gonna set. And
they gonna be on set. Mama gonna find a way. I always said, y'all don't let the wrong bitch in Hollywood. That's what I always say. I am the wrong one. I'm here to win. I'm here to get it.
That's what I see when what inspires me and what gets me excited whenever I watch you. And I think it's a difference from people who sometimes when they have kids already, like when I came in, it's kind of similar where I was like, well, some people gonna fuck with me. Some people don't fuck with me. Neither of these things matter. I gotta make this much money to support my son, support my family. We gonna one way or another, we gonna get it. So you just let me know which direction to lean into. Is it gonna be acting? Is it gonna be voice acting? I'm always gonna do my stand up. I'm always gonna try to write and pitch in case I can, you know, pan for gold in case some of these strikes out for me. But either way, I gotta go. There is no not getting it. And I think sometimes when you just have that pure force of will, the universe bends to that.
Yeah, and that's all it takes. You know, stop waiting on people to believe in you. If you believe in yourself, you can succeed. Stop waiting on somebody. I don't give a fuck what nobody say about me. You ain't got to believe in me. I believe in my damn self, and that's why I'm at the place where I'm at now. I don't need no pat on the back. All I need you to do move hell out of my way.
I don't need you to open the door. Just quit pushing against it on the other side.
That's all I need you to do. Let the door go. I know how to open it, and I know how to take it off the hinges. So, you know, and that's all it takes at anything in life.
No, truly. Well, last thing I'm gonna ask you before I let you enjoy your evening, since I know it is later for you than you like to be. we usually just ask for a little piece of advice, maybe from you learn from your career, from your family, from the drug dealing. It doesn't really matter where it's from, doesn't really matter what it is, just some type of little pearl of wisdom, little nugget of advice that can help my podcast, help our Getting Better community to get better.
I mean, just like I said before, you know, just believe in yourself. A lot of times people are not going to understand what you're trying to do. As long as you understand what you're trying to do, don't nothing else matter. Because what's for you is for you. I mean, you see people selling crazy stuff all the time. You're like, what it make? And then you like, people buy this stuff? And then say, you know, they're a millionaire. That could be you. So believe in yourself.
True words. I really appreciate it. Thank you for taking the time. You got the show, Miss Pat Show on BET+. You got the special on Netflix. Is there anything else that we should plug for you?
I have a podcast myself, if you don't mind if I say. It's called The Pat Down with Miss Pat. So it comes out every Tuesday. So that's the only two things I'm plugging right now. So the show, or watch the show. And if you have already watched it, just let it run. Because I make a few pennies when you just let it run.
Just put it on in the background. That's all you need.
That's all I need. Just let it run. And the Pat Down podcast. That's it.
I love it. All right. And go see it live, because you're always touring. So
yeah, use MissPatComedy.com. I'm sorry. MissPatComedy.com.
MissPatComedy.com. Well, Miss Pat, truly, I appreciate you coming by. You are a true legend. The show is amazing. It's such a great black show, and it's also just a great freaking sitcom that I hope people from all races give it a shot. But like, just the perspectives that you use, the things that you guys are willing to talk about, it's just, it's inspiring. It's a really good show. So keep up the good work.
Thank you. I appreciate you talking with me.
Of course. Anytime. Thank you for coming. Thank you guys for listening. Bye.